Today is Thursday, August 16th, 2018, and we're here in the Founders Room at Raven Landing Center. And I am Nona Howard, and I'm here today with Joanne Oring. And Joanne, I want to thank you so much for coming and being a part of the Raven Landing Resident Stories Project. This has been going on for a while, and it's going to be great when it's completed. We'll start with a little biographical information. Can you tell us where and when you were born?
I was born in Chicago, April 9th, 1936. My parents lived in Chicago until I was four, and then with the help of all my uncles, my father built a house outside of Chicago in a little suburb in the middle of the truck farms. We moved out there in 1940, so I grew up in this small subdivision surrounded by cabbage fields and corn fields and potato fields just outside the fringes of Chicago.
Okay, what did your father do? What was...
My father, during the war, he worked as a motorman for the Chicago Transit Authority, driving streetcars. Right after the war, he got a job working for a roofing contractor, an insulation contractor. And then a few years after that, he started his own roofing and insulation business, and he worked with that for the rest of his working life.
Oh, did your mom work, or was she at home?
Oh, yeah, my mom was a riveter at Douglas Aircraft Plant during the war.
Oh, my gosh.
And she bucked rivets inside the gas. She bucked rivets inside the gas tanks of C-47 airplanes that they built for the U.S. Army.
Was she that famous riveter?
Huh?
And was she that famous riveter during the?
Pretty much. She and her partner used to take turns dieting, so that one or the other of them could fit into the gas tanks.
Oh, my God.
To buck the rivets on the inside.
Did you have any siblings?
I have an older brother. He was 4 years older than me. He just died last February. He was four, almost five when I was born.
Well, tell me about where you went to school and about some of your friends in the school.
Oh, yeah. Well, my brother and I both started a brand new elementary school in 1940 that they opened in 1942. I don't know where he went to school before they opened that one, but I know he did.
But this was your first year in school,
right,
42.
Right. The elementary school had no kindergarten, so I started school in first grade. And I went to the same elementary school, K through eighth grade. There was no junior high available to us. So my high school, or my eighth grade graduating class, was only 21 kids.
Oh, my gosh.
And then we got dumped into this huge township high school, a mile or two away, that picked up kids from the junior highs in Park Ridge and Des Plaines, Illinois. And we got dropped, this 21 of us got dropped into this 1,500 student high school. And I never saw any of my classmates again in class in high school. Never had a class with any one of them again.
Oh, 1,500, that's a lot of students. And that was in Chicago? Or
was it's a rural township school. It took in students from Park Ridge, Des Plaines, and the rural areas around those towns. They were the fringe. The Park Ridge and Des Plaines were the fringe of Chicago at that time.
Now they've
been
gobbled
up. When I was in high school, the baby boom hit our area. And by the time I was out of high school, all those cornfields and potato fields and everything were wall-to-wall homes. And the truck farmers had sold all their property along the main drags for $250,000 an acre, which was fantastic in the early 1950s. And now Lutheran General Hospital and Golf Mill Shopping Plaza are built on those old cabbage fields I used to trudge through on the way to school.
Oh, it's a changing world, isn't it?
It certainly is.
Yeah, it's changed.
Changed tremendously. Yeah. When,
so did you? What did you do after you got out of high school?
I went to Northwestern University on a tuition scholarship and on the federal work study program. So I got my tuition and books paid for, and I got $100 a month for working 20 hours a week at the graduate school office at Northwestern University. I had a wonderful course in office skills working 20 hours a week at the university, and I majored in history. Working 20 hours a week in the federal program required that I only take 3/4 of a full load of classes. So I went to summer school every summer to make up that last quarter, quarter, so I could graduate in 4 years. And by the time I graduated, I was ready to try a master's degree, so I got admitted to the master's program at Northwestern and finished half of that before I chucked it all and followed my husband, my fiancé, to Alaska.
Oh, okay. Tell us how you met your husband.
Oh, I first met him when I was 13. He and my brother were high school buddies, and I made his acquaintance at that time. But we didn't really start dating until we were both bridesmaids and groomsmen at my brother's wedding.
So how old were you then?
I was 18, and he was 23. Mm-hmm. He was just back from the Army at that time.
Oh, uh-huh.
And so I was a sophomore going to Northwestern, and he was a returned veteran going to University of Illinois down at Champaign after he came back from Alaska. He was stationed in Alaska during the Korean War. My brother was in the Navy during the Korean War. Neither one of them ever saw action, unless you call coming to Alaska action. But my husband had an interesting life here. He was one of the first two white men integrated into an all-Negro artillery unit.
Oh, really?
Right. And
in the military. That's in the military.
In the U.S. Army, right.
In the Army.
And they were the only Army unit stationed on Ladd Air Force Base during the Korean War, though some in winter 1952-53 is when he was here at Ladd Air Force Base in an Army artillery unit, and they were supposed to protect Ladd Air Force Base from air attack by whatever enemy happened to show up, and the Army artillery unit lived in Quonset huts. Right in the middle of the area where they were building Bassett Hospital at the time, and all of the Army Air Force guys lived in nice barracks all around them, and the Army units in these Quonset huts.
And I remember at that time, I came a little later, but there were pillboxes still out along the roads that said.
Oh, they were.
So that was. So, and he fell in love with it first because of he was.
Well, he liked it. He liked Alaska a lot.
How long was he here then?
Just for a year and a half, I think. Maybe 2 years altogether.
Yeah, year and a half.
Oh. But he majored in accounting, and when he got his CPA degree, or got his CPA, he told me that he wanted to come back to Alaska because he liked it here. And CPAs earned a living wage in Alaska where they didn't in Chicago.
So you all got back together and dated for a while?
Right.
And when did you get back together?
At my brother's wedding in 1956, I was 18 or 19. And I think that Christmas season in 1956, I think, was really our first date. I invited him to a Christmas party that a friend of mine was giving. And I guess that was our first date.
Your first date.
Yeah.
And then when did you get married?
After he came back to here in 1959, he finished his CPA in Illinois in 59, and he bought a new car and he drove up the highway to get a job. And the plan was that I finish my master's degree that year, and he would come back to Chicago and we'd get married in the spring, and then both of us would come back to Alaska together. But by about 4 months after he left, it was not going to work. So I just chucked everything and said, I'm coming to Alaska, make the wedding arrangements. And
so you came up here and got married.
So I came up here and got married at Immaculate Conception Church. Father Murphy married us.
And what year was this?
December of 1959.
December of 1959.
Right.
Okay, so he did his business. He became a CPA here.
Mm-hmm.
And what, did you do anything here?
I got a job as a short 6-month contract with the Bureau of Land Management in the January of 1960. As secretary of what they called the Records Improvements Project. It was a project set up by the by BLM get all the land records in shape to turn over to the new state government. The project, I think they ran out of money anyway, and they were only supposed to go until July of 1960 anyway. So my job ended at that point, we never did finish the work. I always wondered if the state ever got the job finished or not. But the records got turned over to the state, and I was out of a job in July, which was just as well because I was pregnant by then. And I didn't plan to work after I got pregnant.
Uh-huh.
And we decided we wanted to have all our kids, however many it was going to be, soon, so that we could get them all out of the house quickly, too.
Uh-huh.
And he was 28, and I was 23, and we figured that the sooner we started having our family, the better. So we'd still be young while they were growing up.
Right. So how many children did
you
have?
So I spent 15 years at that point as a full-time mom before I got all the kids in school.
Okay, and full-time. How many children did you have?
We had 5 children.
5 children.
Right. Oh. 4 are still living.
Oh.
We lost one in really, really tragic circumstances in 1980. It's not easy for either one of us to talk about it even now.
I can imagine that as a child. Are the children still here?
2 of them live in Alaska. My daughter, Catherine, who has just retired from her job as an assistant registrar at the university, she has 3 children. So my daughter, Catherine, has 3 children here in Fairbanks.
Uh-huh.
My son Tom lives in Anaktuvik, Hattie Morey in Anaktuvik have 3 children actually. Tom has another son who's 22 or 23 mm-hmm. now, and my grandson TC, who also lives here and is starting his own family.
Yeah. So you have family here, so that's good. That's
so my one daughter lives in California, and she has 2 children. Connie's kind of splits her time between Colorado and Fairbanks. She has an internet job. She's a technical editor for a firm that operates mainly by internet. All of their employees work from home over the internet. So she brings her job with her and comes up here for about 4 months every summer.
Oh, that's good.
And she and my son-in-law Jeffrey live in a dry cabin over on the other side of Chena Ridge.
Oh, good. Well, that's really good. So I know what brought you to Alaska. And so did you do anything after you got your children all in school? Did you go back to work at all, or did you just stay home?
Jim suggested that I get my teaching certificate sometime, I guess, right after the 67 flood, as a matter of fact. He said, why don't you start going to school part-time and get your teaching certificate? I already had my bachelor's degree, so all I needed was the education classes for a secondary teaching certificate. And I said, I don't want to be a teacher. And he said, well, you don't have to do it forever. You just until the kids are out of school. Because if you teach, you can be home in the summer times when they are. So I said, well, okay. So I got my teaching certificate, and then I spent in 72, and then I spent 3 years substitute teaching before I got hired during the pipeline boom in 1975. Uh-huh. And I started teaching on a team teaching situation at Ryan Junior High. I was the social studies half of a social studies English team with another teacher. Uh-huh. It was my first year full-time teaching, and it was really difficult because I had three different teaching partners at the time. They were all military wives, and they kept leaving. So I had three different teaching partners
that
very first year.
That you had to train.
Right, in effect. But like, you know, what was I when I started teaching? 75, I was
40.
I was 40. Mm-hmm. That was 40 that year, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and I had enough kids of my own, so that kids didn't scare me, especially junior high kids, because two of my kids were already junior high age.
Uh-huh.
And then they opened two new high schools that year. And since I was almost the last hired at Ryan, I knew I was going to be picked to go to one of these other schools. So I volunteered to transfer. And they took me out to North Pole. And I taught at the junior-senior high there for 8 years. And then when a separate high school was built and opened, I moved into senior high and taught another 12 or 14 years there.
And then you retired.
I finally retired after 22 years.
What year did you retire?
1997. Right, and then I started my third career.
Then you started your third career. I want to hear about this third career. Because it's probably more fascinating.
Well, after I retired from the school district, I decided to go ahead and join the Pioneers. My husband had been a member for a number of years, and I was eligible to join on my own hook. By that time, I'd been here for 30 years. So I joined the Pioneers. And in 1998, they asked me if I wanted to be a representative for the Women's Igloo on the board of Pioneer Memorial Park Incorporated. That's the 501c3 nonprofit organization that the Fairbanks Pioneers created to operate their museum in Pioneer Park. And so I agreed to do that. I didn't have anything else to do at the time anyway. All the kids were gone, and I was retired and putting on too much weight anyway. So I decided I better get busy and do something. And I sat on the board for 2 or 3 years, and I got more and more frustrated about the fact that that nothing had been done. We had this great collection of documents and photographs and objects and everything, and they had no idea what they had. People just kept giving them things, and they kept stuffing them into corners in the storage rooms and never doing anything with them. They had put together the museum, but they hadn't cataloged anything. Well, they had started the cataloging, but nobody had really touched it for almost 30 years by the time I got on the board. And so around 2002, no, it wasn't it. That wasn't, it wasn't that. The president of the board died in 2002, and they talked me into being president because I didn't know any better. So I decided to take on the presidency of the board, and then I started actually looking into things, you know, actually handling things in the back storage rooms. And I'd come out of there covered in dust and dirt and more frantic over the fact that all of this wonderful stuff was not on display, was not cataloged, nobody knew what we have. We had a heck of a lot of historical documentation and photographs from the early days of Fairbanks that nobody knew anything about. They couldn't find it because we didn't even know what it was, let alone where it was. So I talked them into letting me investigate a computer program. I'd gotten an advertisement in the mail. I used to pick up the mail and open the mail and take care of the mail, and then we got this advertisement for a museum software program for small museums. And they were doing a workshop in Anchorage. So I talked the board into, I told the board I was going to go to Anchorage and take this workshop. And so I borrowed somebody else's laptop computer because I had to have one to go to take the workshop. And took this 3-day workshop in Anchorage, and I came back all enthusiastic and talked the board into buying it for the museum. And I said, I want to computerize everything so that we can actually find it and figure out exactly what we have. And so I spent the next 20 years
And you're still chairman of the board, right?
I'm still chairman of the board. But
you're not working every day at the museum, just starting this last week or two.
Not anymore, no. The job kind of got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger as we went along. And when I finally decided I had to retire, or at least I had to get some help, I started writing my job description. And it turned into 3 separate job descriptions. None of them is full-time, but one is a 6-month contract for the shop manager. The shop manager orders things to resell so that the shop can make some money for the museum. She does all of the ordering and the hiring of the people who operate the museum desk in the summertime. Museums open every summer for 9 or 10 hours a day, every day, 7 days a week during tourist season. And so we had to have people to do that.
And you have people paid for that, or is that volunteer? And
those people are paid for. There's no way we can operate the museum for 60 or 70 hours a week
with volunteers.
On volunteers.
Yeah. Yes, so they're paid, but
paid just minimum wage, but most of them do it because they enjoy the work anyway, the mm-hmm. job anyway. They just love to talk to tourists and so on. And I'm not really good at that. I can talk with tourists and make conversation for a couple hours at a time, but after that, I just want to bite people's head off and say, "Leave me alone." So I leave the front desk work to other people.
So that has been your second or third. First, you were family oriented, then you were
teacher, right.
And then now you were a museum curator.
Right. But it's a good thing I had all those office skills I learned when I was in college.
Yes, it is, because you put those to use, and it's a beautiful place. I've been there several times, and I always send people out there, make sure they go out and see
Thank
that
you.
Museum. So is there any one thing you'd like to tell us about your career that you would like your descendants to know? Anything special that you would like to... What was your favorite part of your jobs?
Oh, the museum work by far.
No, the museum.
Most teachers will say the students, but like I said, I'm not all that much of a people person. And I like the kids okay, but I didn't fawn over them and treat them like my children, like I see so many other women doing. Yeah. I don't think that's really a good idea, you know?
Yeah. Well, good. Can you tell us about some of your fondest memories?
Well, my fondest memories are... probably from my 20s, when the kids were little. And I was frantically learning how to raise a family on very little money.
It was tough back then, wasn't it?
Right. I did some 4-H when I was a kid, so I learned a little bit about sewing. And my mom taught me all about preserving garden stuff and gardening. And... while the kids were little, I taught myself how to make all their outdoor gear because I couldn't afford to buy it. Uh-huh. So I learned how to make parkas and leggings and mukluks and big mittens. Mm-hmm. And how to grow the garden
preserve it.
Preserve it, and we bought a big freezer for the preserves, and so we could buy meat in bulk, you know, half a carcass at a time. Jim tried hunting, but he didn't mind the hunting, but he sure didn't like the hauling and packing and butchering involved.
Yeah, it's sort of messy.
And being a CPA, he figured out what it cost him. And even without any of the equipment that everybody else, you know, everybody else buys like $30,000 or $40,000 worth of equipment to go hunting with, that does not seem like to me like they're saving any money. But they keep saying, "I need that stuff for winter meat," you know.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's wonderful. It's a wonderful story of your life. What brought you to Raven Landing?
I got too old to garden, in effect. I couldn't work my flower garden, and I had given up vegetable gardening when I got into full time teaching, because I didn't have time to do the preserving. School started just at the time when you were supposed to be putting up all that stuff from the garden. So I just grew just flowers, and then I got too old. I'd find every time if I was be bending over to weed something, and I'd fall over. I just didn't have the balance anymore, so I couldn't keep up with that. And all the work of keeping the house just got to be too much, and So I told Jim I wanted to move to town, and we had put a deposit down on Raven Landing way back at the beginning when they were first starting the plans for it, and we kind of kept in touch with them, although we weren't actively involved with the planning or the meetings or things like that. And when Raven Landing Community opened, I told Jim that I wanted to go on the waiting list, and he said okay. And so we did that, and we got called when Building 2 opened up. And so I spent the whole winter before 2012.
Yeah.
Packing all the stuff that I wanted to take to Raven Landing. And about a week before we were ready to move, I said, Jim, when are you going to start packing your stuff that you want to take with you? And he said, I'm not going. And I said, oh, thinking about all of the stuff of his that I had packed along with mine. So I said, well, what's going to happen? He said, well, I'm just going to stay here. So
you were driving into work all the time.
No, he had retired. He had retired.
But you were coming.
I was driving into town every day, going to the museum.
Yeah. From North Pole.
Right.
We're living in North
Pole.
Well,
from halfway between.
Yeah.
You know, we lived almost exactly halfway between North Pole and town.
Oh.
On Badger Road, off Badger Road, on Persinger Drive.
Oh, huh.
It was 12 miles to town and 9 miles to North Pole. So.
Yeah. So he said he was.
So I said, well, I'm not staying here another winter. And he said, well, you don't have to. Just go ahead and go on. And I said, are you ever going to move in? And he said, I don't know. So I moved into Raven Landing. And eventually he took back all the half of the stuff that I had packed that belonged to him. Well, not half of it, but all the reference books that I had packed that he wanted to keep for reference books. And he was living at the house and I was living at home. And I began to realize that he shouldn't really be living alone because his memory was starting to go. So when I had to have a hip replacement in late 2015, I told him I'm going to have a hip operation and I need you to come and take care of me when I'm recuperating. So he said, okay. And he came in and he started living here then, and he's never gone back to the house.
Have you sold the house?
No, we haven't sold it yet. We're getting it ready for resale now.
Uh-huh.
Right now. Because
but they came and then, right. Yeah.
I think it's still going to be a struggle when I tell him I want to sell the house. He's not going to want to give it up because, you know, it's giving up independence.
Right. So, but tell us about your experience here. Has it been good for you?
Oh, yes. Very definitely.
A lot shorter to go to work.
I'm not all that much involved with the things going on at Raven Landing because I've been so much attached to the work at the museum.
Right, you were working full time. You were
there
every day.
All the 5 years I've been here, yeah. I went almost every day.
Yeah, even in the wintertime, that's when you got all the work done.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't get much done during the summers because I was always running the shop, you know, and keeping the shop operating.
So you have to do that in the summer. Right. Wow. What a wonderful thing that you have done for the community, though, I will tell you that.
Thank
you for that. And I'll have a final question, unless there's something that you would like to go on record and something else that you would like to say that we haven't covered. If not, then I'll ask you to tell us, what was your favorite age?
Oh, my favorite age was my 20s.
Your 20s.
When the kids were little. And, yeah. And I was learning by leaps and bounds. You never stop learning. I think that's the thing, the important thing that I wanted to, that I would like to say. Never stop learning.
Right.
That's when you start getting old.
And never stop working at something.
Right.
Working at something.
Because, exactly, yeah.
Because that's...
And, you know, make yourself do it no matter how...
Yeah.
How tired you feel.
Yeah.
Or how reluctant you are to get moving.
You've done a wonderful job for the community, and I thank you for that.
Thank you.
And I thank you very much for doing this today.
Oh, it's been fun.
Okay. And to the transcriber, I'm sorry that the noise you heard is a bouncy ball on the court outside the room.